Hey everybody, this is Brendan. I'm here solo today because I wanted to let you guys know that we're taking a tiny little break. I'm actually in the process of moving, so it's really hard to record stuff. But I wanted to come for a short little episode today about the Bill of Rights. July 4th just passed. It's really looking kind of tense out there with free speech and the freedom of the press and all these kinds of things. So I thought it would be really great to sort of go over what Kevin had already talked about in our American history episode about the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation. And so I'm going to do a quick overview here about the Bill of Rights. The first thing I wanted to talk about was the First Amendment. So in the Bill of Rights, it's 10 different amendments that are added onto the Constitution. The Constitution is this strong document that sets up how our government is, you know, basically regulated, right? We have the three different branches in the federal government, with the judicial branch being the Supreme Court, the executive branch being the president and those different groups underneath the president. And finally, you have the legislative branch, which is Congress, which is made up of two different pieces, with the House of Representatives and the Senate. So you have these different pieces going on. And in order to keep the federal government from becoming too powerful and infringing on people's rights and sort of becoming that strong central government that was domineering, just like how England was becoming really sort of intrusive in people's lives, we created the Bill of Rights to protect people. And so the Bill of Rights really are a shield that are designed to protect people. The First Amendment is really, really important. There are five pieces in the First Amendment. Freedom of speech. This doesn't mean you can say anything you want, but it does protect most things. So, for example, you know, you can go online and talk about your political beliefs, you can go online and talk about religion, you can go online and talk about, you know, abortion, or you can say whatever you want. And I'm sure if you have a Facebook or you have a Twitter, you've seen some crazy stuff out there before. But people have the freedom of speech, and so they're allowed to post these things. The freedom of the press, that's where this really sort of sticks. The freedom of the press is the same kind of thing. It really sort of used to be all about paper and the printing press, newspapers, brochures, pamphlets, those kinds of things. But it does apply to modern press. So if you have a blog or a video blog or an Instagram or some other sort of online social media, you can technically call that press. And so it falls under the same categories that you would look at when you look at the freedom of speech. You're allowed to talk about a lot of stuff. You're not allowed to threaten people's lives. You're not allowed to say something that would cause immediate harm. A famous example is like yelling, you know, fire in a crowded theater. The Supreme Court ruled that because that creates a clear and present danger, you are not allowed to do those kinds of things. So freedom of speech, for the most part, is protected, but if you're doing something that is particularly dangerous, particularly threatening to a group of people or a specific person, those types of speech are not protected. And that includes both, you know, spoken and written speech. The third right that the First Amendment protects is the right to petition. So what you can do is you can go and petition your government. If you want to get a stop sign added to a particularly dangerous area in your town, you could go get a bunch of signatures from people that live in the town, go to the town hall, go to the meeting, bring up the issue, show the petition, and hopefully the government in town will take care of it. The same kind of idea works in the federal government. If there's a petition that goes around asking for the abolition of nuclear weapons, with enough signatures, with enough people involved, the federal government is essentially forced to respond to it. The fourth piece of the First Amendment is the freedom of religion. And so what this does is essentially gives people the right to practice any religion that they want. And Congress can make no law that limits that religion. Part of the reason we're looking at this is because a lot of Americans have English heritage, and when they first came over, they were being persecuted for their religious beliefs. You know, if you were Catholic, the Protestants in England were upset with you. If you were a Puritan, you didn't really fit into to England. And so all these different religious groups, when they came over, they were sort of being, you know, bullied or persecuted. And so in America, we just said, you know what, there's no official state religion. You can practice any religion that you want as long as you're not harming other people. It's totally fine. If you want to be atheist and believe in no God, that's totally fine too, right? You know, Congress is not going to get involved with you or your religious beliefs. The last part of the First Amendment is the fifth right, and it's the right to assembly. So what this says is basically you have the right to assemble peaceably. So you can get together with people. You can do that at a sporting event. You can do that with a church. You can do that during a march if you want. You can do that in a lot of different ways. And sort of gives you the ability to protest, the ability to get together and share ideas, the ability to practice religion in mass groups. You can do all these kinds of things with permission from the local government. So, for example, when you look at parades, people have to get permits well in advance. People have to get permission. They have to get support, all these kinds of things. And so, you know, typically governments are pretty favorable with granting those permits. You know, in some rare cases, they do actually deny people. And that can sort of be seen as a type of oppression, limiting the First Amendment. So it can be kind of rough. So the First Amendment is really important. It's got those five different freedoms that are really super, super important. And so it's great to memorize those. The Second Amendment is all about guns. It says you have the right to bear arms. Back when it was written, they were talking about muskets and, you know, they said everybody has the right to own a gun. You know, if you need to create a militia to fight against an invading army, something like that, that'd be totally fine. Nowadays, we interpret it to mean that everyone has the right to purchase a firearm. There are caveats to it, though. In many states, you have to be a certain age. There might be restrictions or limits on the types of guns that you can purchase. There might be restrictions on the magazine size. There might be restrictions on accessories that you can add on to your guns. There are all kinds of sort of restrictions on different types of firearms, given on what, like looking at what state you're actually in. The Third Amendment has to deal with the housing of soldiers, and so it's essentially not a problem at all today. Nobody deals with it. But back in the day, the Third Amendment basically said soldiers are not, you know, given some sort of obligation that they can stay in your house and you have to provide for them, right? They're not allowed to do that. So soldiers have to give you your space. The Fourth Amendment's really interesting. It's about search and seizure. So the Fourth Amendment says you cannot have the police search your stuff and take your stuff without probable cause or without a warrant. So it's basically protecting you. If you're driving down the street and the police pull you over, they want to, you know, open up your trunk and take a look, you don't have to let them do that. If they want to look in your glove box and it's locked, you don't have to unlock it for them. If they want to search your house, you don't have to invite them in. If they want to look through your phone, you don't have to let them do that. So essentially, what the Fourth Amendment says is that the police do not have the right to go through your stuff. Now, if it's out in the open, if you're driving down the street and they pull you over and they look and there's a bloody knife or something like that in your car, that creates probable cause. And the police officers then have the right to go ahead and search either your car or your house or wherever they see this kind of thing going on. So probable cause is something that each officer determines on their own. Essentially, do they think that a crime has been committed, or do they think that somebody's in danger based on what they've observed? So the Fourth Amendment gets a little trickier as we get into sort of restrictions. Like in schools, students don't have the right to privacy when they bring things onto campus. Their backpacks can be searched by police, even without parents. When you look at the cases of your cell phone or your computer, the government can look through those things, but there's a huge legal debate on whether or not they should be allowed to, particularly if it's encrypted information or not. The Fourth Amendment is super, super important. It's written about a lot. Oftentimes, cases will get thrown out for, you know, evidence that was found improperly. It's called fruit of the poisonous tree. So if a police search takes place and there was no warrant signed by a judge, there was no probable cause, the evidence, no matter what they find, can't really be used against you in the court of law. So a good lawyer would basically be able to speak with the judge and say this evidence was found illegally and therefore should not be eligible to be used in court, and the jury can't take it into consideration when they decide whether or not you're guilty or not. So it's really a big one. The Fifth Amendment. Sometimes you'll see on TV people will say, "I plead the Fifth." And essentially what they're doing is they're saying, "I'm not going to testify against myself in court. If you're trying to get me to admit to committing a crime, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm not going to say anything at all." Typically, this only applies to criminal cases. So if you're in a real serious situation, that's when the Fifth Amendment would be really handy. You basically don't have to prove you're innocent. You're assumed to be innocent. Typically, this is in situations where if you did testify, it would prove that you committed some other crime which the court may or may not be aware of. So, yeah. It also has a little fun mentioning about double jeopardy there. And so double jeopardy basically says you can't be tried for the same crime twice. So if you were accused of committing a murder and you went to court and you were found not guilty, whatever evidence was found later, if they found video evidence or if they found DNA evidence later that would prove that you in fact had murdered someone, they can't use that against you in that same court case. So an example of this would be like O.J. Simpson. If he had written a book called If I Did It, where he described murdering people, that evidence can't be used against him. He can't go back to trial because he was already found, you know, not to be guilty of murder in the past. So the same case cannot be brought in front of a jury multiple times. The Sixth Amendment and Seventh Amendment, they basically say you have the right to a lawyer, you have the right to a speedy jury, you have the right to a trial by your peers, where the jury is a group of peers. It's essentially once you're arrested, these are your legal rights. The whole idea behind this is they don't want you sitting in prison forever. If you're an innocent person, you're sitting in jail or you're sitting in prison, you're obviously going to have your life kind of ruined. And so what they say is, we're going to make this, you know, sort of hurry up as fast as we can. So either you'll be guilty or you won't be guilty, but we're not going to let you just sort of be sitting there in limbo. In practice, it doesn't really happen this way. Our court systems are massively overloaded, and so oftentimes people are not really able to get through the court system as fast as they would want to, and they're sort of stuck. So in some really sad cases, innocent people will be stuck in prison for several months before eventually coming in front of a judge. Sometimes when things are really bad, it might be as long as a year or two. And there are horrible cases where people's lives have been ruined with that. The Eighth Amendment is really cool. It basically says there is no cruel and unusual punishment and there is no excessive bail. So if you are caught shoplifting like a $5 candy bar or something, I don't know, and the police arrest you for it, which is kind of silly, but okay, the police arrest you for it, you can't be forced to spend 10 years in jail, or you can't have your hand chopped off. In America, the punishment fits the crime. If you did something really horrible, well, then your punishment's going to be pretty horrible. If you did something really minor, your punishment's going to be really minor. In this country, we consider like speeding tickets. You know, you broke the law, you went too fast, you got a ticket, you have to just pay a fine and you might get higher insurance rates, but it really doesn't sort of stick like other crimes. You're not punished in any sort of severe manner. So the punishment always fits the crime. The punishments also cannot be cruel and unusual. They can be cruel or they can be unusual, but they can't be both. So for example, if someone was arrested and they were found guilty of robbing a bank, the punishment could be, you know, working on a line with a bunch of other guys breaking bricks like they used to do in the 1920s and 30s. So it's cruel, it's really hard work, but everybody who committed these types of crimes is being punished the same way. So it's not unusual. The punishment could be unusual where, like, for example, the people that committed these crimes have to go ahead and, you know, paint murals all over the city. It's a very unusual sort of, you know, punishment. But as long as it's not cruel, as long as they're not being, you know, sort of forced to do something that's, you know, obviously, you know, trying to torture them, then it's kind of fair. You know, typically judges stick to the guidelines that they have, and they don't go outside of it too often. With younger kids, if you're, you know, underage and you're younger than 18 and you get in trouble, sometimes there's a little bit of flexibility that judges will use to try to prevent you from going down the wrong path. The Ninth Amendment basically says that any rights that have not been listed here are assumed to be given to the people, right? So example, for the right to like privacy on the internet, that's a right that is assumed, but it's not specifically stated, because in 1789 or whenever they were writing this, they didn't really have the ability to see that in the future. And so they just said, okay, whatever rights do come up in the future, you have them, unless the government specifically says otherwise. The 10th Amendment says whatever rights that are specifically claimed by the federal government are our issue. Everything else is the state's issue. So, for example, driver's license. In each state, you have to get a new driver's license. You have to register your car. Every state has different sort of policies with that kind of stuff. Alcohol. Each state gets to choose at what age they sell alcohol, how they sell alcohol. Is it private stores? Is it in a state-run store? All those kinds of things. Firearms. In different states, they have different regulations on guns. All kinds of things. Education. The list is endless. Essentially, states are in control of anything that the federal government does not specifically care about. So, that's basically it. Those are the Bill of Rights. There have been 17 more amendments to the Constitution. But those first 10 amendments make up the Bill of Rights. And those are the basic rights of all Americans. So, yeah. Anyways, I hope that was informative and not too boring. Anyways, I hope you guys are all doing well. And as soon as I move to my next place, Kevin, Nick, and I will come back with another podcast. We'll be doing world history. And I hope you're all doing well. Stay safe out there.